Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And this time we're going to talk about a movie called Ben-Hur from 1959.
Mm-hmm.
Starring some guy named Charlton Heston, I think.
Yeah.
Oh.
Or as I call him, Old Square Jaw.
Old Square Jaw.
Yeah.
And it is longer than I remembered.
Yes.
So be sure to give yourself plenty of time.
I know. Well, for one thing, that intermission came on and I thought, well, there can't be that much left, though. There is a second DVD. Wait a minute. And we powered on through, and about 10:30 we got done. We were as tired as Charlton Heston when he'd been rowing that galley.
For 3 years. This movie is 3 years long. No. It is excellent. It's like three hours and 20 minutes or something like that.
It is because one thing I noticed that I had never noticed before, it's kind of a leisurely telling.
Yes.
You know, they sweep across. They give you plenty of time to take in the marketplace. And the donkey and the, you know, little kid running around or whatever. And I actually really liked that. I felt like if they tried to remake that movie today, they would make it a lot zippier.
Probably so. And I liked it too. I was never bored. I liked it even more than I remembered.
Me too.
Yeah, this watching, it was just, everything was magnificent. But mm-hmm. but I think they probably lingered because they worked so hard on those sets. and you know, the photography, the cinematography was it was fantastic.
Oh.
There were so many times where you just want to take a photograph and hang it on the wall or something.
Mm-hmm.
Just gorgeous. And yeah, I'm told, or some of the stuff that I read said that they just built, you know, lots of sets, you know, and they even built a little Jerusalem. It was all filmed in Rome, I guess, or outside Rome at some studios. Go ahead.
The desert parts were in Spain. I thought this was interesting because they were going to film in Libya, and then the Libyans discovered that it was going to promote Christianity, and they were like, no, thank you.
Negative.
So they went to Spain, which has the only desert in Europe, which I did not know. So there you go.
I didn't know that either.
And my husband said, well, they probably welcomed them with open arms, going, oh, the Muslims didn't want you? Come on in. Thanks to our history, we're all over it.
Wow. Yeah. So, yeah, so Charlton Heston played Judah Ben-Hur.
Mm-hmm.
And his antagonist, Masala, was
Stephen Boyd.
Yeah, Stephen Boyd. And one of the things that I didn't know that I read the other day was that they both have blue eyes, and they made Stephen Boyd wear contacts so his eyes would be dark.
I thought that was great.
The director wanted him to be a contrast, you know?
Well, he was supposed to be Italian, you know, Roman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Roman.
So, you know, now there are blue-eyed Romans, but, you know. Well, and also, I'd forgotten that William Wyler directed this. He was a huge director.
Yeah.
I mean, important.
Right.
He might have been big also. I don't know.
You know, not really known for biblical epics, right? It was, is this really the only one of this type that he ever did?
You know, I didn't look at that.
I'm looking at his list of movies. I don't really see. It looks like some of his other famous movies are like The Best Years of Our Lives and
mm-hmm.
Funny Girl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, neither of those are Ben-Hur-like.
Well, and he did a whole, he did a ton of different kinds of movies. And I could be wrong because I'm not looking at a list, but I feel like he did a movie about South American airplane flyers that was somebody like, oh my gosh, somebody unexpected like Clark Gable or somebody. And it was an older movie. And I just remember going, I love this movie. It's not the greatest, but maybe I have the wrong director. But anyway, but I saw his name and I went, wow, he was big and not known for this kind of thing. And one of the quotes that I saw was where he's Jewish. Mm-hmm. He said, it takes a Jew to bring the Messiah to everyone. And, you know, I was like, I'm sure there was a huge laugh after that. That was great.
I'm sure. Yeah. So he won, he won Best Director, the Oscar mm-hmm. for Best Director. And before this, he was nominated as Best Director for one called Friendly Persuasion.
Oh, right. And, the Quaker thing.
Yeah. And one called Roman Holiday.
That's it.
Okay.
Right.
Detective Story.
Mm-mm.
The Heiress. The
Heard
Best
of
Years of Our Lives.
Yeah.
And he won he won for The Best Years of Our Lives, and the year before, he won for something called Mrs. Miniver.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And Greer Garson. Yeah.
And he was nominated for The Little Foxes, The Letter, Wuthering Heights, and Dodswood before those.
Oh, The Letter. The Letter you should watch.
All right.
The Letter
I'm putting that on
is
my list.
Just plain fun. It's right. If you want to see Betty Davis.
Betty Davis.
I'm pretty
yep.
sure it's Betty
yep.
Davis.
I'm looking at
being
Betty Davis.
Horrible. Very evil. So bad. And just lying her face off and so convincingly and corrupting people. It is just fun.
Oh, cool.
It's really a great movie.
All right.
Yeah.
I will grab it.
Yeah, yes. It's just a good time.
Well, that's great.
Yeah,
he is
really a talented director, and he's not somebody based on all those movies who you would think of for this, but he did a good job. And then, Charlton Heston, was this before or after The Ten Commandments?
I believe it was
before?
After, because after? An article that I read said that he picked up the chariot pretty quick for this movie because he was trained for it in The Ten Commandments.
Okay.
I'll look at this and just verify, but that's what the article said anyway.
I believe it.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about the chariot scene, but he was a little nervous, you know, when they filmed the race and the guy was training him said, listen, just don't fall out. I guarantee that you'll win.
Because his heart was pure. Well, actually,
his heart was,
pure.
Yeah.
It wasn't
right.
very pure, actually.
He definitely was flirting with the dark side of the force, I can tell you that.
He was, and we'll have to talk about that, too. Yeah. I mean, when can we start talking about these
Let's
things?
Let's talk about these things. You bet.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Everyone know the story of Ben-Hur?
First of all, it's called Ben-Hur, A Tale of Christ.
Yeah.
Now, is that the subtitle of the novel as well? And the novel was written
by
Lew Wallace.
A Tale of the Christ, I think so. And
okay.
that novel is by Lew Wallace, who was a general in the Civil War
mm-hmm.
and then a governor.
Yeah.
And when I was talking to Jesse Willis on SFF Audio, hey, Jesse, he was talking about the book, which he would like us to read and talk about. And he said, no modern politicians could do what he did. They are not fit to lick his shoes. And that is not praise you hear often about politicians from Jesse. Just putting that out there.
Nice.
But I do remember when I was reading up about the book, they were saying that this kind of book was super popular. And this was a huge bestseller because nobody could travel. And that's why there are so many descriptions, very lush, about what the people are wearing and what they're doing and how they sound and look, because no one could ever go there.
Right.
And so you kind of feel like the movie picked up on all that, because how many of us could do that?
Yeah.
I can't do it now. So
right.
back then, you really wouldn't have gotten to see a lot of that stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the story opens, I don't know if the novel opens, but the movie opens with the birth of Christ. It's an interesting subtitle, you know, A Tale of Christ, because it's not about Christ. Christ is infused throughout. It's a story that takes place at the same time as Christ.
He's around the edges. He stops it now and then.
Yeah.
He shows up occasionally.
Occasionally, right. The book opens, or the movie opens with the birth of Christ, and then quickly moves ahead to about 26 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the story starts, where you first meet Judah Ben-Hur, who mm-hmm. is at this time a rich Jew living in Jerusalem. And of course, they're under Roman rule. They've been conquered by the Romans. And in comes this guy named Masala, who he grew up with. So they're right near the same age. But Masala is returning as... He was a Roman the whole time that he grew up. But now he's returning as... let's see, he wasn't the governor. What was he?
I think he was maybe the head of the... Not the army, but the kind of like coordinating the forces or something for the governor. The governor's right-hand man, right. Maybe.
So he wasn't the number one man, but he was like number two.
Yeah.
A very powerful Roman. And... Charlton Heston is a powerful Jew, but is not free, right? He's being ruled by, you know, by the Romans against their will.
Right.
And that's where the story begins. So these two friends, they meet each other, you know, they greet each other, hooray. And you can tell very quickly that this is very dangerous. It's like they're both dancing around the fact of, their circumstances are different. And, you know,
well, because Masala's tasked with putting down any rebellious activities, and Judah Ben-Hur is like, well, I'm not going to participate. And he's like, oh, but you'll tell me who's involved, right? You said you'd help. And he's like, well, I can't. These are my people. And he's like, I thought we were friends.
Yeah. And then, you know? that was a big moment. Yeah. Because he was relaxed. Charlton Heston was relaxed, so it took him a little bit by surprise. It's like he said, well, you know, there's some people agree with me that we shouldn't be violent. That's what he said. He said some of the people that I talk to agree that I shouldn't we shouldn't engage in violence. And then Masala says, well, who didn't agree with you? I want names. And that's the moment where that what was obvious became, you know, extremely obvious, you know, he was like, I can't tell you that. And I'm not going to, just because they don't agree with me doesn't mean I'm going to give you their names. Because
and Masala is no statesman.
No, he's not. He's not. He's a man with bad priorities.
That's an interesting way to put it.
Well,
yeah.
It is.
Well, no, that's a good way to put it.
All
he's
the way to the end, to the end of his life, to the end of his life. He had it wrong.
Yeah, well, he made terrible choices.
Yeah.
He, and from his bad priorities. And I would say that, he's scheming and he's proud. And that's a bad combination.
Definitely is. Definitely is.
Especially when you look at the thing that he had the upper hand. This whole story, he's had the upper hand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and look what it gets him.
Yeah. Yeah. And he came to Jerusalem thinking, you know, hey, I've got a powerful friend. I am going to really show Caesar.
Yeah. I am going to look good.
I'm going to look so good. And I'm going to take this guy with me. And he's going to be so happy. And of course, Judah Ben-Hur doesn't want anything. He doesn't want anything that this guy wants.
No, he just wants to be friends again. And right. I mean, the level of betrayal that happens then, because an accident happens. It looks like Ben-Hur, you know, threw a stone down and killed the new governor. Of course, that's not the case. It's an accident. And, you know, this is Masala's chance. And he manipulates it and gets everyone thrown in jail and Ben-Hur sent off to the galleys and meetings happen. And then he meets the general or the naval general, admiral or whatever you call him, consul, I guess.
Yeah.
And it was funny because we're watching and this consul is for some reason drawn to Ben-Hur. I believe the level of hatred glaring out of his eyes at him and the bared teeth like he's a tiger who would bite him if he came near. And that's a look Charlton Heston does well. It's one of his five looks, and it was a good one on him. And so what happens is he winds up getting to rescue him, but they have certain moments where they're kind of trading, you know, barbs with each other.
Yeah.
And at one point, you know, Ben-Hur stomps off back down to the galley, and the general's left kind of clutching his head, and my husband said, I hate those educated prisoners. They're the worst. Give me someone stupid.
Oh yeah, that's too funny. Talk,
oh, so he rescues the general. This is super fast. Yeah. Is that okay?
Oh yeah, go right ahead. Yeah.
Rescues the general. The general has really bonded with him. He takes him back to Rome and then gets his whole situation looked into, and it's all fine. And he adopts him as his son because his son died earlier. And, you know, huge honor, but Ben-Hur can't stick around. He's got to go look for his wife, or his wife, sorry, his mother and his sister who were thrown into prison. Mm-hmm. And I guess we forgot along the way early on when he was still rich and happy, there was a one of his slaves is a master trader, I guess, and he's got a gorgeous daughter, mm-hmm. Esther.
She was fabulous.
Oh, she she was beautiful, and she had a wonderful accent. She had the best makeup of any woman in the whole movie, just to make sure we knew she was beautiful, and the tightest clothing also.
I didn't notice any of that.
No, it's. I'm sorry. It was you're a pure soul, Scott. I'm sure that lovely accent didn't tempt you.
No, not a bit. Not a bit. I'm totally immune.
I was kind of interested, actually. I looked that actress up, and she didn't do a lot because she got married and I guess decided to, you know, spend her time with her family. But she had been a Miss. She was Palestinian from before Israel was a state. And then after it was a state, she was the first beauty queen who ever was in, you know, like the Miss Israeli beauty pageant or whatever there.
Yeah, so her name is Haya Hararit, H-A-R-A-R-E-E-T.
Yeah.
Yep.
Nice. And I liked her.
Yeah, I liked her very much.
Yeah. Yep. So anyway, there were some moments up on the balcony. I know I backtracked here, but I was sitting there and Ben-Hur's kind of lounging back doing that tiger look again at her. And she's kind of, oh, Ben-Hur.
That's so funny. You call it the tiger look. That's funny.
Like, oh, my word. I believe the temperatures just went up about 15 degrees in here. Charlton, I didn't know you had it in you, sir. It was remarkably effective.
Let me take a drink of this water. All right, go ahead.
Did the ice all melt?
Anyway, yeah, they liked each other.
It was made clear there was an attraction there. And so when he comes back, he finds in his place is Esther and her father. And Esther had been trying to, you know, find out what happened to the mother and sister, but she couldn't. And it had been, 5 years? So they were probably dead. But he immediately starts stomping off and throwing around his new Roman status at Masala, going, you will find them or you will be sorry. And Masala's like, fine.
Yeah.
Go see.
That's the first time they saw each other for 3 years. He thought he was long dead.
It was fantastic.
It was a good scene. It was well done. Yep.
Ooh, so-and-so, Quintus Arius's son. Oh, all right. You? What? This is the worst day I've ever had. Until later. But so his best buddy goes down to look, and they it just looked, I have to say, even though it was Hollywood prison, it still looked pretty dank. There were no windows.
You are cracking me up. This is hilarious. Keep going.
Well, I'm glad I'm
you should do like DVD commentary.
Like Mystery Science Theater kind of stuff. Anyway,
Heck yeah.
They didn't have moss growing on the walls, but you felt like they could have. And there were no windows in there, so they'd been in there in the dark for 5 freaking years.
Yeah, yeah.
That looked awful. So anyway, they kind of go in and go, back out. They're lepers. So they immediately hustle them right out of there. And out, they go back to the house, and they're like, don't tell Judah, it would ruin his life. We just want him to be happy and not see us the way we were, which I have to say, maybe that worked back then. And I'm sure
I was upset too. I was like, you know, and then when Esther lied to Judah Ben-Hur, and I was like, what?
Right.
No. But then later on, she redeemed herself when she was taking care of them secretly. I felt good about her again. Yeah.
But I felt like this was a huge plot hole.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Oh, we won't make him miserable because we're lepers. Now, I know lepers were the low, you know, they were awful, they were infectious, and blah, 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 blah. But
that scene where Charlton Heston goes down into the pit where the lepers are living, and
nicest leper colony.
And gets to, is hiding behind the boulder while Esther is giving them stuff. That is the most William Shatner moment I think I've ever seen.
Was he biting his fist? Felt like he probably had to.
Absolutely.
Be.
It was extremely dramatic.
Well, my heart kind of bled for him.
Yeah, I felt bad for him, but that was serious acting.
And
Charlton Heston won an award for this, didn't he? Didn't he win Best Actor for this?
Well, it won 11 Academy Awards. If he didn't win Best Actor, it would have been a huge slap in the face. I don't know. I didn't look it up.
I'm pretty sure that he did. But anyway, go ahead. So he was, lepers.
So they run away.
Yeah.
They go out, and Esther's like, well, but I should tell him. No, don't tell him. We want him to remember us the way we were. So they go off and be self-sacrificial. And so she says, okay, I happen to know, because Ben-Hur is going to do like some crazy stuff till he gets the answer. And she's like, oh, I they're dead. I saw their bodies and I lied to you. I'm sorry. So then he's really pissed, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he goes off and he's like, I think I want to kill Masala so much. And I'm trying to remember, how does he meet the guy with the... Oh, he had already met some...
Yeah, he met the Arab guy with... Okay, he did some chariot racing when he was living in Rome.
Right.
And then he...
Backtracking.
And then he met the local charioteer, the local guy with the horses, while he was on his way back to Jerusalem.
That's it. It was an Arab guy who had his... I loved this, I have to say. Maybe it's the girly love... loves horses thing. But you know, he had his four children, as he called them.
Yeah,
these beautiful white horses that, and because he was full out Arab, you know, the black face, the turban, everything. And he, interestingly, the person who introduced them was Balthasar, one of the three kings.
One of the three wise men, right.
Yeah. Which the book starts off with the three wise men meeting and telling each other their stories and what led them to follow the star, which is a really neat moment, I have to say.
I agree.
Anyway, so, so he begs Charlton Heston to, you know, erase them. And he says, no, not going to do it. And he's like, oh, I don't know. I feel like, you know, the guy who... is the main guy, Masala. Masala. No, got to go find my mother and sister. So after he goes and has words with Masala and all this stuff, and then his mother and sister are dead, he's like, fine, I will get him.
Oh, yeah.
Back to the chariots,
yep. And then there's a big race.
Oh, my goodness. I know. We were looking at that track and went, this track is much bigger than we remembered. 9 rounds of this would just about knock out any set of horses. Good
and
thing
it was
selling
it
those
was
horses
incredible. I mean, all the action movies that I've seen, you know, before this one, you know, and this is not the first time I saw this movie, but I was riveted. It was just so incredibly well done. This race just
even so,
blew me away.
Mm-hmm. Even now.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, you know, they've got to be showing this in film school saying, this is how you cut this together. This is how you do this.
I think it took 5 weeks to film.
Oh, wow.
And then we're running tour buses by there and everything.
Gee whiz.
Well, and I have to say, you know I've seen that more than once, but that dirty, lying, cheating Masala, of course, has the chariot with the spikes sticking out of it. I know it's no holds barred, but no one else did it.
He's
the worst.
He is the worst.
And so the first time you see him going to use those, he's going to use them on the horse's legs. And I have to say, Tom and I both gasped out loud. We did not expect that to happen to the animals. We remembered it being used on wheels of chariots and things.
Yeah.
We're both like, we were so relieved.
Watch out, horses.
Huh?
Yeah, watch out, horses.
I know.
Yep.
And, it's a monster in human guise.
Right. And then when Masala finally loses control, that was amazing. Amazing.
Yeah, we actually both gasped. We both were like, oh, no, because it was horrific.
Yeah, it was.
I thought he just went down, not hanging onto the reins being trampled by
Isn't it funny sprouts? The details you remember?
Yeah. But
yeah, this time I remember that pretty clearly.
Yeah.
It was just like, wow. Really stunning.
Did remember Charlton Heston not using a whip, of course, because his heart is pure.
That's right.
Or he loves the horses.
Yep.
Just, you know, whipping him with the reins, you know, just like the reins up and down. Come on, let's go. Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But that's it. So, So, Masala, what a chump. You know, no, don't cut my legs off. We have to or you'll die. No, he's going to come. He'll come. He has to see me as a whole man. I'm like, you are no whole man, buddy.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You know, all the way to the end, Masala had the wrong priorities, right? He was like, that makes me a man.
From hell's heart, I spit at thee.
Yeah, but he was wrong.
Oh, he was. Yeah, he didn't get it. And so, he's just waiting to tell Charlton Heston, ha, 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 your mother and sister aren't dead. I'm going to hurt you again. They're lepers.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, now I'm dead. So poor Charlton Heston, he's horrified. He runs off, follows Esther, who's been taking food to them. And she's not lowering it down by the platform like everyone else. She's carrying it in herself because she's a stand-up gal.
That's right. That made her awesome.
Yeah, that's right. She loves them more than she fears the disease. So
that's right.
Then he's totally mad at her. She's like, they made me promise it should have been her. Or whatever she would say to him.
Yeah.
And so eventually.
Yeah, and she's been watching Jesus.
That's it.
She's been watching Jesus on cable. She's been watching him. And he's out giving, you know, the Sermon on the Mount, and she goes and to see him, and Charlton Heston is just, his brain's too busy with what he's thinking about, so he does not stay and watch.
Religion.
But she's getting,
I have no time for that.
Yeah, she's very touched by it.
Yep. And then he's full of hate. And she says, well, you know, here's what the young rabbi said. You know, forgiveness is stronger, this and this and this. And I bet if we take, he's been curing people, by the way, I bet if we take them to him, we can get them cured. And he's like, now that I am on board with.
Yeah.
And so I forgot to mention that when he was on his way to the galleys, he was dying of thirst in, it must have been Bethlehem.
Mm-hmm.
And no one was going to let him have water because he was the worst hated prisoner there because of Masala, I guess. And one man was brave enough to do it. And just a look from him made that centurion unsure, back off, and turn around. And that was Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we didn't see his face ever, but we knew who it was.
That's right.
So
that was a cool scene, too.
That was great. I had forgotten that. And I guess because I was watching it for us, and because this is the first time I've watched it since I've become a Christian, that almost more important than the water was the fact that he was stroking his hair.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Right.
That he cared. And just one look from him kind of made everybody know the depths of their soul or something. It was really great.
Yeah.
Yep. So they take... They are carrying the mother and sister. Oh, because, right, the sister's dying. She's always been a bit frail, so she's dying now. And they're carrying her around, and that's when they're like, where is everyone? It's all deserted. Well, it's Jesus' trial. Pontius Pilate is washing his hands. And at that point, the emphasis all turns to how they're reacting to watching Jesus standing there for trial, carrying his cross out and falling down under it. Being nailed to the cross, and the three women are left because Ben-Hur is just like, I have got to follow this guy and see what's going on. It's like, wait, I know this man. What are the odds, you know? and that's a transformative moment for everyone. And I have to say, for all the flack and the lack of depth of acting in Charlton Heston, which actually for me it worked fine for this movie.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I loved him in it. I felt like when he came back to the house after seeing Jesus die, he had this look on his face that was so peaceful. It was so different than anything we'd seen from him. And I, at that moment, I felt completely different about him.
Yeah, I remember the same moment. It was really well done. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I remember his face and everything. I can see it in my head right now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was marvelous.
Yeah, it was truly, he was wonderful doing mm-hmm. that. And then he finds out that everybody got healed in the aftermath of Jesus dying at the moment he died.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And happy endings for all.
And that was well done, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, affected me very deeply. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was well done.
I could have cried just a little bit.
Maybe.
Maybe anybody had taught me, but since they didn't catch me, I'll never admit it. Tear to the eye.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, well done. Well done.
Yeah. That's the fast version. That took about 20 version. Minutes.
Yeah, it still took a half hour. But no, goodness, it's perfect. So, yeah, the two main characters here have really interesting arcs, and that mm-hmm. is Missala and Judah Ben-Hur, of course. Yeah. Now, Missala, we talked a little bit about him, just a little bit more, but he, you know, like I said, he's got, you know, the screwed up priorities, and all the way to the bitter end. I mean, he's laying there just bleeding, yeah. and he's saying, "Don't cut off my legs because I want him to see a whole man," right?
Right.
But he wasn't. I mean, he wasn't a whole man. So what he thought that life was about and what he thought made a person a man was wrong the entire film.
Yeah. That's when he realized.
Yeah, he didn't at the end understand anything, which was, you know, a bummer.
Well, yeah, because here's the thing. He, as I was saying before, his scheming and his pride, they sow the seeds of his own destruction.
Mm-hmm.
If he'd have left Ben-Hur alone, Ben-Hur would have never been sent off to the galleys. He never would have been adopted. He would never have gained all those honors and come back to be the thorn in his side and beat him in the chariot races that way.
You're right.
I mean, every single thing that happened to him that was bad was because he was pushing the envelope in the wrong direction.
Right. And it was a result of his actions.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he shouldn't have complained a bit about that coming back to him, but yeah. You know, people do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And if he'd have lived, he would have been ruined anyway because he made that big bet with right. the Arab horse.
He lost all his money, and yeah. that too was pride.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Now Charlton Heston, on the other hand. He has this deep faith when he's a rich person in Jerusalem, and that faith lasts him through mm-hmm. 3 years rowing a boat
mm-hmm.
and 2 years in Rome racing chariots until he's finally free. And then it gets shaky when he's back in Jerusalem. Right?
Well,
did you have that impression too?
Oh, yeah. But I was thinking about it and I was thinking, you know, because one of the most touching ways that you saw that was the, I don't know what that's called, the thing on the door with the piece of the, yeah. I guess it's part of the Torah in it or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. That you
Something
know,
he that he touched of, every time he went in that door.
Yeah.
He would touch
and
it.
That's, mm-hmm. My husband was saying his, when he was a kid, his paper route, he said there were lots of houses that had this slanted metal plate with the candlestick on it. That had the piece of paper behind it. He didn't understand why until he was older. Hmm. But there were tons of houses in that neighborhood he lived in did it. So I thought that was interesting. But even when he comes back after the galleys, you know, he's at his old house and he kind of kisses the wall. There it is.
Hmm.
But so he's got faith in God when he's rich. And he's despairingly turning to God when he's in the galleys. Because he's filled with hate and he's totally powerless. And then when he comes back, he wants it his way.
Yeah.
he wants to be able to hate and kill and everything. And Balthazar says, no, 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 no. You know, that's not the right way. That's not what God would want. Whereas the Arab's like, well, you know, accidents happen. The best place for it is the chariot race.
Yeah.
And you see him putting that knife in his clothing, just in case. But the prayer that he says before he goes to the race, I meant to write it down, but it was very similar to Jesus' prayer in the Garden of Gethsemane.
Oh.
It wasn't take this cup from me. It's like, I really want this, but it,
yeah, and he
make
he
it
said,
what you will, not you're what right. I
want. But he said, forgive me for wanting this vengeance.
Right.
But my life is in your hands, and whatever happens is going to happen.
Yeah.
Something like that?
And yeah, something like that. And then also, not what I will, but what you will.
Hmm.
I feel like he said that, because that's when I went, whoa, what? I don't remember hearing that before.
Yeah, and that was, it was a surprise at that moment, because I felt like he wasn't thinking about God at all, but then in that moment he did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You wonder if what Balthazar said just had enough effect, and he was faithful, as you said. It's just, I really felt like his journey is every man's journey.
Hmm.
You know, we have those times when, you know, we're betrayed deeply sometimes by people that we love. Things go horribly wrong with our family members and we can't save them, but we want to. You know, we go from being pretty well off to having the ground knocked out from under our feet, whether it's riches or something else.
Sure.
And I thought it was interesting that Quintus Arius, the naval general or the consul, had said, oh, you're alive because you hate.
Hmm.
But even then, he kind of grounded his hate in, God's going to keep me alive till I can get back there, you know?
Yeah, that's right. And I felt like that was, he did, he was angry at the Romans. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I didn't think that Quintus had that correct.
No.
You know.
Well, he hated where he was.
Yeah, your eyes are full of hate, 41, right?
Yeah.
But he, I felt like he was full of more than that. It was, you know, the guy said, well, hate will keep you alive, but he had a lot of faith at that time, too. He was powered by the knowledge that he was going to be fine. Right? He was going to be released. You know what I mean? He was trusting in God. And he said that.
Yeah, because that's all he could do is he. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. So in his moments of despair then, he was going forward. And that's, you know, feels like the kind of thing you see in the Psalms.
Right.
You know, I'm in the pit of despair, but I know that later I'll have a reason to be joyful.
Right. And I'm going to row this boat and I'm just going to keep doing it. And this is temporary.
Yeah.
And I know that it's temporary.
Yeah, because if they take me down, it's not because of me.
Right, and that knowledge of the temporary gave him strength.
Yeah.
But he wasn't fond of the Romans. Because what have they ever done for us? No.
Yeah, he was pretty depressed. And they went, which kind of sail is it when they're out on that raft together? And he's like, oh, it's yours. It's yours.
It's fine. Nothing but the Romans. Yeah,
I did like their little bit of wordplay when he had to chain the general up so he wouldn't throw himself over and kill himself in his dishonor for losing the battle. And he's like, we keep you alive to serve this ship, Quintus Arius, which is what had been said to the slaves of the galley before.
Yep.
I'm simple. I like those little pleasures.
He's like, I need you alive so that I can survive this, you know, because if somebody sees me alive, they're more likely just to throw an anchor on my head or something.
Yep. Exactly. But so you were saying then his faith got shaky.
Yeah, then his faith got shaky back when he got home, and now he's found out that it was really when he thought his wife and sister were dead that I started to feel like he lost it.
Yeah, his
and then
and
he
sister.
Becomes yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah. His mother and sister. But then he started to become overwhelmed with revenge. Right.
Yeah. And that was a really great scene, I thought, where he was sitting there and he's just like, well, I'm full of hate. I have to do something about it. I'll go off and, you know, like become a zealot or whatever. He's, and she's like, no, no. I heard the young rabbi talking about forgiveness. He's like, pfft. You know, but it was that you could see that he's like, all I have left is my hate, but I'm empty. Maybe I'm not giving Charlton Heston enough credit. He has these moments where you can sense, you know, that depth of feeling and that he's lost and he's delivering it in that way. And I don't know if it's the directing or the other times he just wasn't called upon to do that, where it was just very basic, you know?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I agree with you. But yeah, he's got great moments.
Mm-hmm.
He had great moments in Planet of the Apes.
Which yep. I have not seen for a long time. I am not an ape.
Oh, heck yeah. But
one of my favorites was the Omega Man.
Oh, yeah, the Omega Man.
A really long time.
Yeah.
This did make me want to watch that again, right, if I might digress a little bit.
Yeah, October's coming. People should watch the Omega Man.
Yeah.
Which is I Am Legend. Same story.
Oh, yeah, that is the same one.
It is. It's a version of that story.
Back to ours.
But yeah, back to ours, yeah. So Judah is on the planet of the... No, he's...
no, the apes are in Jerusalem.
Oh, that's
right.
No,
wait.
Yeah. But I liked it, you know. And then he collects himself again in time. You know, he finds out that his mother and sister are still alive and they're lepers, and that's really hard, and he holds onto the rock. But then he comes out of that, and it's not really because of Jesus, right? It's not like he saw Jesus and he keeps rejecting going to see him. You know, things are happening kind of around him, but he's too busy. He's like walking by.
And did you catch that moment though, when it's the Sermon on the Mount?
Yeah, yeah.
And she's like, oh, there he is, you know, and he's like, ah. And he's getting a drink out of the stream that's flowing by. And he goes, there was a man who gave me water once. He should have just let the water run into the sand to let me die. And she's like, what? No.
Yeah.
And she goes on up to hear him. Mm-hmm. And he kind of says, I'm thirsty still.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, the living water. Well, you'll never be happy until you get the living water. I got that one, by the way, everybody, you know.
Yeah. Like, and it was great. And the cinematography right there. Right?
Yeah.
Where you have the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus there, you can see him in the distance talking to these people, and Charlton Heston walks from, you know, the right side of the screen off stage left, and that was awesome.
Yeah.
Just no, so it was, perfect. It was just like, wow, that is so good.
Especially with that line, I'm thirsty still,
yeah.
And he's got his back to the source of what he needs.
Yeah, just great.
Yeah.
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 So then, you know, but then he starts to realize it, and it's partly due to his, I guess, fiance at that time. And then he lets it go. Let's see. I'm trying to remember the order of events
here. The problem is it gets muddled. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, does he come out of it after Missala dies?
No. I thought that's when he was like, now what do I do?
I can't remember the order.
She comes back, and that's when she's like, I think if we take them to him, he'll heal them.
Right. And that's before. After the chariot race, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
That's after, that's because he found out that his sister and mother were lepers because of Masala, and that's... So
that's right. That's
that.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's after that big event that changes him. That's what sets him on the course, is like, I've done this, and then, yeah, so... Yeah, it's very well done. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, because then he's just directed to saving his family, right?
Yeah.
And isn't this the way? Often it's your family or the people you love or something else you're trying to do that kind of lures you into the place where you can't ignore God anymore.
Exactly. Exactly. He was busy. That's such a good way to put that. He was busy.
He was very busy.
And then now he's not busy, and he's like, you know, I've not been doing this right.
Yeah, and he can't stop up to that point. But when he gets there and Jesus is on trial, he can't do anything else. And their attention is all arrested. And when Jesus goes by and he's like, wait, I know him. I know this man. And he then says to Miriam, or I'm sorry, not Miriam, Esther, keep an eye on them, you know, his sister and mother, as they're sitting slumped there against the wall. And he goes off after to see what's happening to Jesus. And it's fine that he does that. That's good. It needs to happen. But at that point, I was like, oh, people were throwing stones at them before because they're lepers, but let's leave them with you, honey, in the middle of this giant crowd. And I'm going to go off and follow the Savior. Sorry, I just had a moment there where I was like, what?
That is funny.
Did you do that? But anyway. And also Esther, who was dying, can suddenly walk well enough to get through the crowd, but that's all right. So
she was feeling better.
So yeah. Anyway, but yeah, when he was following Jesus, it was interesting because he was so interested in what was going on. He was trying to get closer and closer and closer. And it's not that he had been personally affected by him at that point, but he was feeling that real draw and that connection.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because when Jesus is going by, when before he leaves everybody and they're just standing there going, what's going on? Why is he on trial? Jesus is going by and he's got, you know, he's dropping his cross and everything. And you can see they show all the people reacting to Jesus. And so the mother and the sister are going, oh, someone help him. He doesn't deserve this. And the women are crying. And a lot of the men are laughing and, you know, being jeering him and mocking him and everything. And that's the point when I was looking at this going, you don't need the Passion of the Christ. I mean, I liked the Passion of the Christ. Oh, it was different movie altogether. But this guy just had a couple of whiplashes on his back. They were symbolic, essentially. And he was still fully clothed. But it was the reaction of everybody around him that told you what you needed to know about Christ at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was affecting, you know, I've seen the Passion of the Christ, you know, and all its graphicness. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this affected me deeply.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Deeply. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was well done. And then, after that we see, you know, the thunder and
the crucifixion.
Yeah, after the crucifixion, right.
And who was he talking to? It was him and one other guy who were standing there.
Wasn't it Balthazar again?
Oh, it was Balthazar, I guess. Yeah, because he'd been looking for the baby. I found him.
Yeah.
Oh, really? So he wasn't saying that about Christ. He was saying that about, you know, what was happening. He was like, this is terrible. But the two of them just kind of watching in horror and also as if they couldn't tear their eyes away.
Yeah. Indeed.
Mm-hmm. And then the women, in the meantime, it's gotten really dark and stormy because, as the Bible says, it goes totally black when Jesus dies and reigns and everything. And so they go take shelter in a nearby cave. And that was something I'd never seen before. I don't know about you, but when the lightning strikes and they're showing the water puddles and in one of them is reflected the bloody crucifix, or basically Jesus on the cross.
Yep.
And then the two lepers are healed.
Yeah.
I thought the rain had touched them, but it didn't. It just, they were just healed.
Mm-hmm. Marvelous. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then he says, Judah goes back to Esther at home, you know, and then says, almost at the moment he died, I heard him say, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do.
Yeah.
And Esther says, even then. And Judah says, yes, even then. And I felt his voice take the sword out of my hand. Yep. Awesome. Just great.
I can't believe it. I'm tearing up again just listening to that.
Yeah. So well done.
Yeah, because we all pick up that sword so many times a day.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe not a day. A week, a month.
Yeah.
You know, if you're mad at somebody for something or have struggled to forgive them.
Right. I agree. I got my own sword. I've been carrying it around a lot lately.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But yeah, it's so good. Yeah, and you know, he's like everybody, right? Judah Ben-Hur is like everybody. You know, Masala is sort of a more of a one-dimensional person, but Judah really goes through some ups and downs.
You know,
I mean, and I'm talking about spiritual ups and downs
along
with the physical ups and downs of, you know, being a slave and rowing the boat and all that stuff, riding the chariot. But it's really, it's really the spiritual story that is so compelling and told in such a marvelous, beautiful images.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, and it's also, you know, because until this viewing, I hadn't really realized what, and you pointed it out earlier, that Masala and Ben-Hur are the two main characters in this story. It is all about the two of them and how they relate to each other.
Yeah.
Everything else keys off of that. And Ben-Hur is, as you say, he's every man. He goes through all these different things spiritually. But Masala is, in a sense, it's interesting because he has no God. He has nothing but himself. And that's why he's so misguided and has such wrong priorities, because he can't see beyond the end of his nose. And so he's only one facet, but he's in a sense like the anti-Ben-Hur.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. When Ben-Hur is thinking properly, he is way more than himself, right? He's a collection of people. He's everything.
Mm-hmm.
But Masala doesn't have any of that.
Would Ben-Hur have been like Masala more if he'd never gone through all this stuff? Was this stuff necessary to make him,
I don't know,
into a better person, to take the sword out of his hand or heart, whatever? I don't
know.
It was.
You know, you have to think about what he was like at the beginning. You know, before all of this happened, he was, you know, part of an oppressed people. But he was rich. He was living a very good life, and he was very faithful. You know, it's
he was generous. Yeah. Didn't give Esther her freedom to marry whoever that was at the beginning of it.
Right. It's kind of Job-like, isn't it? And then he had everything taken away.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you have to feel like, even though this isn't the way God would have done it himself, you know, thank you, Masala. Hmm. But you have to feel like he came out of this a better person in the end, because his immediate reaction when he finds out what's happening to his sister and his mother is, I will have vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can't really blame him.
Yeah.
This is free Christian. But even so, in the Old Testament, it was, you know, that wasn't really the way you were supposed to do it. There were the laws laid down, but when you read a lot of the stuff, God's like, no, change your hearts, soften your hearts, don't be like this.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, he was definitely a better person for having gone through everything. I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, from the moment where he, you know, was taken away to the end, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, and that's interesting. You know, all the stuff we go through all the time, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we learn things about ourselves, making decisions every day.
Yeah, and it's the, how do you react to the temptations, the small immediate ones? Mm-hmm. You know, you have to choose, I'm not going to lash back at you. I'm going to take a different way, whatever it is. Or the big, long things where you just kind of have to go, you know what? I'm doing the best I can. These things aren't going my way. I'm just going to have to trust that I'm doing everything I can, and God's got a bigger idea.
Yeah.
And I'll see it later.
Yeah. You know, sometimes I wonder, you know, you're supposed to carry your cross, right? And carry it and do it. But how do you know when you're not carrying the right cross? Does that make any sense? It's like you're carrying something that you can give up. But should you or not? You know what I mean?
But the cross then is something, but isn't the cross then the struggle with that?
I'm
not sure exactly what you're talking
about. That's a very
good,
no, I see what you're saying, and that, I understand that. That's a good point. That's an excellent point.
Yeah.
Yeah, the cross is the actual struggle with that decision.
Yeah.
Interesting. You're right.
I mean, I don't know.
You're right. No, I did. No, you're absolutely correct.
Oh.
So, yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was just thinking, though, but any of those struggles like that, those are the cross. And it's that thing that C.S. Lewis said. He goes, it's not, we were promised the cross. Like, if you're doing it right, you've got the cross. And that's the thing we struggle with all the time.
Yeah.
And it's the thing we try to avoid. And then Timothy Dolan, Cardinal?
Yeah.
Archbishop, he is, Cardinal, yeah. Whatever
he's
is.
Cardinal, yeah.
I'm a fan. I just can't remember what level he is in the church.
Yeah.
He says the cross is, you know, we were promised the cross, and it's the way things, you know, if we're doing it right, we have it, but we can't see that very easily. But the devil knows it, and that's why he's always tempting us to give it up and avoid it.
Interesting.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
I'm never going to really, I guess that's the thing, is you, it's not that you seek it out, but when it comes your way, you just kind of go, okay, instead of trying to duck out.
Right, right. And that's the thing, you know, it's like, you know, when you do duck out of something, you know, are you ducking out of a cross that you're supposed to carry or not? I mean, it's almost like, well, you know, you don't want to make yourself suffer to suffer,
mm-hmm.
but there are certain things that you shouldn't walk away from.
Yeah.
And sometimes discerning the difference between those two is hard.
Yeah.
Right.
And sometimes you can't tell, you just do the best you can and go on. And
that's all we can do. That's all we can do, period.
Yeah. Because you know, if you're ducking out of something that you really, really should do, it's not true uncertainty. And you're just going, well, I'll try this. If you're really ducking out of something you should be doing, you know it way down deep.
I think so too.
Because then you're making excuses to yourself.
Yeah.
Or perhaps I'm the only one here who's had that experience, in which case I'll just cop to that. That's a fair cop, Governor.
That's right. Right.
Yeah.
If she weighs the same as a duck. That's right. I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't help but think of Life of Brian throughout this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Where was Brian during this movie? So now it's like, oh, so they were really ripping off this movie, too.
So many times.
Yeah.
My husband would look and he'd just start quoting lines. I'm like, oh, gosh, I think they just sat this in front of them and set the scene up.
Yeah. Oh, Pontius Pilate has a lisp. I don't know what's wrong with the actor in this one.
Yeah.
But
exactly.
too funny.
Yeah, I know. Just, well, it's the guards, the way the guards were dressed and would walk around and mm-hmm. everything. And it's just, yeah.
Too good.
But I just also want to say, one of the things I loved about the movie itself was that I was looking at it knowing that these were all real people and animals. No one was faking me out. Someone had to get those people dressed, get them out there, and have them all doing the right thing.
It's absolutely right. You're right. And the track was real. The track mm-hmm. that they ran on.
Mm-hmm.
Jerusalem was real. Building a big old, I mean, they didn't film it in Jerusalem, but they built, you know, 10 blocks or something like that is what I read. So yeah, I mean, it was huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's something impressive about that.
There really is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the whole movie cost them $10
million. Oh, man.
Yeah. Which is only a third of what Serenity cost.
Yeah, but how many years earlier?
They made like $70 million on it.
Okay.
That's what the information I'm getting on that is IMDb.
They rigged it in.
Yeah, so they did it. Excellent. Well, actually, it says budget $15.9 million. There was probably post-production there. And then $70 million. You know, an interesting thing that I read is that... gosh, I wish I had where I read this, but it said that William Wyler was asked to stay through post-production.
Really?
And so he did. And they said, and they offered him an extra $100,000. So that made me think, today, that would be normal for a director, right? The director being involved with all the editing and all that stuff. So it was odd to me to hear that. Did directors not normally stay through the editing process? Didn't that sound weird? That doesn't
sound odd.
That doesn't sound like it was right.
Unless, because of the studio system, the studio just assumed the ownership of that sort of a thing. Maybe that's why people like Orson Welles had so much trouble when they wanted to take more control of it.
This is a question for your daughter. Please pass it on.
I know. We need to ask Rose this question.
Yes, indeed.
Okay,
but
Rose,
please do ask her, and I would love to know that answer, because that made me raise my eyebrow. I was like, really? You know, they were like, you did such a good job directing that we want you to edit it too. You know, cool. Isn't that normal?
Yeah.
I mean, they don't edit it, but they're there approving everything, I thought. Or did the editors back then have that power to make those decisions?
Well, you know, there's still the thing of the these days, studios look at two different cuts before they decide what they want to do.
Do they really?
They look at the director's cut.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. So yeah, that's what the director's cut of the movie is? I always thought that was...
No. Maybe. But before the studio sees it, before they decide what they want to release.
Okay.
The editor, the director has the editors do what he or she wants.
Mm-hmm.
The editor does their own cut, their own version. And the studio watches both versions because they acknowledge that the editing is as much part of the art as the directing. And sometimes the editors will take what the director did and change it and make it better.
Interesting.
Or just change it and deepen it or something like that. For instance, in and it can change it so much. This is an extreme example, but I'm thinking of, gosh, what was the movie? Steven Soderbergh. Oh, The Limey, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen it, but there's some movie like that where that can't be right. But anyway, he and the editor were watching it because he edits also. And they just went, oh, this is boring and straightforward. And then they went, let's put it together backwards and see what it does. Wow. So interesting. So that's what they did.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How about that?
And but yeah, so the deal is with editing, super fast, short history. Thanks via, Rose, is... when editing started out in Hollywood, it was all women who did it because they viewed it like being a secretary. You're just cutting stuff and putting it together. Well, the women started using their artistic abilities on it, going, oh, well, I would do this and this and this. And then everybody went, wow, that really changed it. I want to do that too, say the men. And pretty soon the women are the assistants or back to being secretaries or whatever. And it's mostly men doing it.
Hmm.
But that was kind of the point, I think, when editing was suddenly viewed as more of an art form also. And so that's why the studio cut usually, I think, is they pick what they want from the two cuts. So you can have the director's cut, but that's why the director's cut may be very different than the studio cut, not just for time or whatever, but because they went with the editor's cut.
Yeah, I always thought it was like the director's cut. Well, I guess this is kind of true. The director's cut is what the director wanted.
Right.
And I always thought that the distributor or whatever would say, well, we need this to be under 2 hours long. And then they would cut it up, and he would figure out what to remove. But he was like, what I really wanted was this.
Yeah.
So that's what I assumed was going on. But I guess that's pretty close to what you're describing.
Well, I think that's fair. But, sometimes, I can remember... Rose would tell me she would edit student projects because they'd have to work as a team and the director would put stuff together and they'd come find somebody in the editing classes and get them to do it and edit it for their, whatever directing class they were doing. And so she would do things and she'd go, oh, no, you've missed the point. She'd edit it her way and the director would go, wow, I did not see that there. Thank you. That's what I'm going to turn that in.
Oh, okay.
So,
interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And like the, sometimes like the editors will just put in music to show the studio and the director and everything until the real music is in.
Oh.
And that's how 2001 got some of its music because the editor went, well, I'll just put this in and they left it.
Nice.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah, that is really cool.
That's all the editing stories I know, probably. So I'll be merciful and stop.
All right. We're going to have Rose here for the editing show. Have her select the best edited movie she can come up with.
Oh, I'll ask her that question.
That's funny. That would be fun, though.
I know. All right. Could she just come up with one is what I'd like to know.
All right. Well, before we go, they are remaking. Right. They're remaking Ben-Hur.
Ooh.
Ooh. And I found this article. This is from The Guardian. And I'm looking for a date. There it is. 16 April 2015. It says Pope Francis blesses Ben-Hur's new Jesus at the Vatican. A guy named Rodrigo Santoro is playing Christ in the new Ben-Hur movie.
Well, if we just see him from the back, it won't matter. This poor Jesus didn't get credited because he had no lines.
Oh, wow. He was excellent, though.
He was.
He was so very good.
He was majestic or cross-carrying or whatever he needed to do. He was wonderful. Right.
So who, you're in charge of casting. Who gets Ben-Hur?
Okay, if we're going for the real Charlton Heston feel, I believe we cannot do better than Tom Cruise. Fantastic. Am I right? Action movie.
Action movie, yep.
The action scenes, he'll be fantastic in, and the rest of it, he might be all right if he can flash that devilish grin now and then. downfallen every so often.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That is hilarious.
How about you?
Oh, man. Who would I choose? I don't know. Carl Urban. Carl Urban, you owe me one if you get that part.
I feel like he might be a bit versatile for the part, but perhaps a bit too much expression now and then.
That's right. I doubt. In fact, I'm sure that they've cast that. I can't know what it is. Let me look up.
Well, there was a TV miniseries of it fairly recently, right, that I heard good things about.
Hmm. That's cool.
I thought.
Okay. Who they did cast. I have it. Guy named Jack Houston. He is an actor known for American Hustle, Outlander, and The Longest Ride.
I saw American Hustle, but, you know, to remember who he was in it would be, I don't know.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm not familiar with him. I'm looking at everything he was in, and, you know, I don't know how to tell you. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. He's playing Mr. Wickham in Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, which is also coming out in 2016,
That's IMDb. His year, huh?
Yeah. Ben-Hur will also be out in 2016.
See, the problem.
In fact, it says Ben-Hur is in post-production, so they're done.
The problem with the new Ben-Hur is I'm going to know 2/3 of those people aren't even there. I'm not interested.
That's true. It's going to be very digital. Mm-hmm. And, oh, this is interesting. The director is Timur Bekmambetov.
Oh, the... Yeah.
Yeah. And you know him from, what do you know him from?
The Night Watch.
Yes, you got it. Night Watch, Day Watch, and also Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. Don't forget that.
I forgot he did that.
Yeah.
Okay, so I take it back. I'm now interested.
That's
cool. He does handle action really, really well.
That's cool.
I don't know how he'll handle religion. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out what they do.
Yeah, will That's it be right. like Ridley Scott's Exodus? Or will it be like, oh gosh, who was it? Noah.
Aronofsky.
Yeah.
Aronofsky. Yeah, exactly. Isn't that interesting that they keep making, you know, biblical epics nowadays? That's kind of a surprising thing.
I know. And why didn't they do any new ones? Maccabees is crying out to be made, people.
Maccabees. It's like,
Love
it.
It's like a Western in Old Testament times. Come on. It's like the Magnificent Seven.
Oh,
right. Cool. Again, there Old Testament style.
Oh, I love it.
Let's do it.
Let's definitely do it.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks for watching this one. That was fun.
Glad you picked it. I looked forward to watching it. I loved it more than I thought I did. Cool. I'm now kind of have a crush on Charlton Heston that I didn't have before, and I might have to watch the Ten Commandments, though.
Uh-huh.
So Yul Brynner is a huge pull in that one.
That's right.
Yeah.
Moses.
I cannot let you go.
Oh, that's good stuff. All right. Okay, so
Robinson, come on.
Oh man.
As his head lieutenant or something. That's right. This had everybody in it.
Yeah, that movie used to be on at Easter every year? I remember watching it on TV growing up more than one year.
Mm-hmm.
It was I'm pretty sure it was Easter.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, biblical.
Biblical, right.
Yeah.
They didn't All right.
Well, I guess they had a lot of them. There was Samson and Delilah, and it had Victor Mature in it, which I never saw. But
I've never seen that.
Not really very Easter-ish, so.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Interesting.
Sorry. I'll quit bringing things up. Keep going.
No, we're just gonna say what's coming next. So in a couple of weeks, we're going to talk about a nonfiction book called Endurance. Shackleton's Incredible Voyage by Alfred Lansing. It's going to be very, very cold in space.
In Arctic. Antarctic space.
Antarctic space.
I have to say, I've read the first third of it, I think.
Yeah.
And the way this guy describes things.
Yes.
I mean, at one point, I felt like I was out there on that ice just listening to everything crackle.
Oh, man.
And going, there is no one. It's just us, a bunch of ice, and space. And this crushed ship.
Amazing.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
And wonderfully terrible. But, right, you know, very evocative.
Very good book. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. And then after that, we're going to talk about another character that has a number. Les Miserables.
Oh, yeah.
2012.
Another epic.
Yep. Another, I would call it a religious epic as well.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so. It's one of the most religious stories I think I've ever seen.
So, oh, yeah.
And then it's October.
Ooh.
And on October the 9th, we're going to talk about Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde by Robert Louis Stevenson. And then after that, Halloween, John Carpenter.
Yes. Yeah.
Jamie Lee Good Curtis. Stuff. Yay.
In knee socks as the awkward teen. This is the only time you're going to see her like, well, maybe you will other times. I don't know. But I just was like, this was a new look for her for me. I was like, what?
Oh, I love it. Cool. Yep. It's a great movie. Can't wait. Can't wait.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to fall.
Me too.
My favorite time of year. Here it comes.
I know. And it's getting a little cooler in the mornings.
It is. It is.
Only about 85 when I get up. No, 76.
All right.
76.
We're in the 50s here in the morning.
Of course you are.
So it's great. This is the best.
Walk outside and we're just like, oh, it feels fallish. I know. It was 75. I was walking the dogs at 7 o'clock.
Up here you get, it hasn't happened yet, but there comes the first morning that you can feel the cold kind of slice through your clothes. That's the best way I can describe it. It's crystal clear and you can feel it. And then that's when you know fall's here. You can also look at the leaves, but what fun is that? You rather feel the cold. No, never mind.
I don't get any of that until about Thanksgiving.
Oh, man, it's coming next month.
They say, this year, because of the way El Nino is doing whatever it's doing, that it might be colder. And the fact that it's not really been over 100 for more than a couple of weeks here, I think, is an indicator of that, actually.
Interesting. We were hotter than normal.
Oh, really? We were, didn't even hit more than like 103. I was stunned. Usually there's a week or so of 110.
Yeah. Well, cool.
So, anyway.
All right.
Enough weather.
Yes. Well, thanks everybody for listening.
Yes. Thank you. I think this one lasted as long as the movie this time.
If you start Ben-Hur now, it'll be over by the time the next podcast posts. So,
good job.
Enjoy.
Yes.
All right. We'll see you later, everybody.
Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.